From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Peña with a local and statewide news update. After the first week of school, Juneau School District officials say they have about 10% fewer students than they forecast in the spring. Among the remaining students, hundreds have opted into Homebridge, the traditional homeschool program the district supports. These are preliminary numbers that are likely to change over the school year, but they're already having impacts. Superintendent Bridget Weiss says some elementary school teachers have been reassigned to Homebridge, and there's more to do.
Homebridge is a great program, and it's supported about 35 kids a year. It's been adequate. Well, now we're supporting 300 kids, right? Or thereabouts. We know we'll have some families shift back. But so that program, we're going to put some time in.
These enrollment shifts could also have a significant impact on the district's budget. The way the state's education funding works is largely based on how many students show up for class, even virtually this year. State law softens the impact of abrupt drops in student counts, meaning with 10% fewer students, funding won't immediately fall by 10%.
But it'll be a hit for sure.
Also, school districts get less money for each homeschool student compared to a typical student. The ongoing COVID-19 pandemic and the district's decision to start the school year without in-person classes are sure factors driving the enrollment shifts. School officials anticipated the trend as the pandemic dragged out over the summer, but that wasn't clear when budgets were drawn up in the spring.
This year, of course, it's extraordinary. Because when we developed our budget, it was just closing right at the time that this was hitting. And, you know, if you think about what we knew the first week of March compared to what we know now, it's pretty night and day difference.
Weiss says school officials will look at every which way possible to resolve the coming funding gap. Some Southeast Alaska towns are setting rain records this summer. Petersburg and Ketchikan saw their rainiest summers on record, while Sitka had the most rainy days. KFSK's Angela Denning has more.
Much of Southeast Alaska is a temperate rainforest, so residents are used to getting wet. But this summer was a little extreme, even for their standards.
It was just low after low.
Kimberly Vaughn is a Juneau resident and the observation program leader for the National Weather Service.
Summer was almost a perpetual fall in how the weather patterns came in. June, July, and August seemed like we were stuck in September.
June is supposed to be one of the driest months of the summer in Southeast, but not this year. Petersburg and Ketchikan saw the rainiest summers on record for June, July, and August. Nearly 32 inches of rain fell in Petersburg, breaking the old record of just over 31 inches set in 2015. Ketchikan saw 47 inches of rain this summer, breaking the old 2017 record. Rain records for Petersburg go back to the 1920s, but have some gaps here and there. Still, Vaughn says, it was a notable year.
A lot of atmospheric rivers just came into the panhandle. It's just not typical for us to have so much onshore flow coming in with such an abundance of moisture.
Juneau was very close to its rain record for the season. As of the last day of August, there was about 23 inches of rain, just an inch shy of the 2014 record. Still, one of Juneau's recording sites, south of the downtown area, actually had the highest rainfall of all sites in the state for the month of July. For Petersburg and Ketchikan, Vaughn says breaking the summer's rainfall records was a combination of having many rainy days and days with heavy rainfall. Petersburg had 4 days in August with over an inch. But other towns in the region also saw days of unusually heavy rain.
You know, we were seeing records being broke by double the amount of what the record was in some cases. And we definitely had, you know, multiple days where we were seeing an inch or more. Some stations, especially down south, that typically get more rain, like Ketchikan over Petersburg, they were seeing daily amounts of over 2 inches in some cases.
Ketchikan also broke its record for most rainy days. It saw 68 days of rain, one more day than the record set back in 1933 and 1940. Likewise, Sitka broke its record for most rainy days at 70 days, breaking its 2015 record of 66. Lots of rain in Southeast is not a bad thing. Much of the region had experienced drought conditions over the last few years. Now, that's all in the past, and watersheds are once again full. As for the long-term forecast, Vaughn says Southeast could see some above-normal temperatures this fall, but precipitation looks about normal. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
For many, sitting in an enclosed space with lots of strangers is a bit scary right now. Since the pandemic hit, the number of people choosing to fly has tanked, but in Alaska, that's often not an option. As KRBD's Rebecca Tauber reports, some families needing medical care have been postponing their trips for as long as they can rather than traveling.
Melissa O'Brien has taken 6 flights in the month of August alone. Her son, Owen, has a seizure disorder and a thyroid disorder and typically visits Seattle Children's Hospital at least every 3 months. Plus, the family recently flew to Kansas to pick up Owen's service dog.
When COVID first hit, we actually had appointments scheduled and we canceled them. I didn't feel safe taking my son to Seattle at that time.
She postponed some appointments and switched others to telemedicine. But she lives in Ketchikan, so she couldn't put off flying forever.
There's certain surgical procedures that have to be done that can only be done in Seattle. So it's definitely a struggle for Southeast.
She routinely has to travel out of state for her son's health care. That's normal.
What's not normal is, you know, having to quarantine and having to test and making sure our employers understood that not only were we going to be gone for a week, but then we would have this time period afterwards.
Her day job is program director at Southeast Alaska Independent Living, or SAIL, which helps senior citizens and those with disabilities. So she's helped many families navigate these kinds of decisions. And she says that while she's lucky to be able to afford hotel costs for isolation after flying, that's not the case for everyone. She recounted one client's dilemma.
He was going to come home and quarantine in a tent because he didn't want to potentially expose his wife, who was also immune compromised.
In the end, SAIL helped the man spring for a hotel room. But this does illustrate how juggling the necessity of medical visits with the risks from traveling creates a sort of catch-22. O'Brien recounted how, in her recent travel, she noticed that not everyone around her takes the pandemic seriously.
Every single time a flight attendant would walk away, somebody would take their mask off.
Amanda Holstein is a nurse practitioner and owner of a family health clinic in Ketchikan. She says she routinely talks through the pros and cons of traveling for treatment. She has some standard questions for patients.
What are they traveling for? Is it something that should not be postponed for a reason? And if it is truly necessary that they go, what is their risk should they contract COVID-19?
She recounts the early days of the pandemic, this spring, when the Seattle area was one of the biggest COVID-19 hotspots in the country, and hospitals made the decision for patients.
I've had numerous clients who had their treatments or their surgeries or anything completely postponed because of it.
Sometimes it's the patients that postpone the appointment. Roger and Susan Stone canceled their March doctor's visit in Seattle because they're at higher risk for COVID-19. Susan began her 4th round of cancer treatment in January. Eventually, they had to get on a plane in August.
But I wasn't real thrilled about going to Seattle. Like I said, I didn't really have an option. But again, we were really careful when we went there.
Susan Stone says the trip went well and that she's had a positive experience with her treatment. But she and her husband are worried about others not following travel mandates.
My fear is that because there's probably a large percentage of people getting off that airplane because the flight terminated here that didn't go through the testing or the question period, you know, what is the exposure to the community?
The changing travel restrictions and increased fears of flying might end up pushing families to seek treatment closer to home. Both the Stone and O'Brien families say they've spent more time with their physicians in Ketchikan.
The partnership between our hospital and the hospital there has really lessened the time that I have to be en route. We're down in Seattle, which I very much appreciated.
No one knows how long the pandemic and subsequent fears of flying will continue. And while getting on a plane for treatment is a necessary hassle for some, the pandemic might also result in people getting to know their local doctors a little better. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Rebecca Tauber.
The Anchorage Assembly says it will reopen meetings for in-person participation by members of the public after the city temporarily suspended open meetings because of the pandemic. This is KTOO News.